Well, hello again, everyone. It's Monday evening. I'm Pam Stack, and you're listening to Authors on the Air. This is my second broadcast of the evening. We are celebrating female crime fiction writers all this January, and my second guest for the evening is Lynn Cahoon. She writes really yummy mysteries. You're going to learn more about her in just a minute. Once again tonight. I so appreciate it. As I said, we're celebrating female crime fiction writers, and that's crime of all types. Some are thrillers, some are cozy, some are romantic mysteries. So it's been a fun time talking with all these brilliant writing women. My show at 9 o'clock, my regular primetime show right now, is I'm going to introduce you to Lynn Cahoon. Lynn is a New York Times and a USA Today best-selling author of the Tourist Trap Mystery Series. They're really, really adorable books. Guidebook to Murder won her the 2015 Reader's Crown for Mystery Fiction. She is also writes the Cat Latimer Mystery Series. We're going to talk about those, too. She has four new books coming out in the new year. The woman is a writing machine. She also has a line of contemporary romance books that we're going to talk about, too, and a new Castleview series. So it is with great pleasure that I welcome Lynn Cahoon to the show. Lynn, welcome to Authors on the Air, and thank you for being here tonight.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it, Pam.
Oh, it's my pleasure. You know, we did a shout-out for female crime fiction authors, like in October or November, and I wanted to speak to women who had never been on the show before, and your name came up over and over and over again, along with most of the other women who've been on the show. So you have a very big fan base. For them to be writing in on my profile page, you know, my timeline saying, we want Lynn Cahoon. So congratulations on all the accolades for your books. Oh, my goodness. You are, across the board, a five-star author. There is... You don't get bad reviews. Congratulations on that.
Oh, I get bad reviews. But basically what I think of when I get the bad reviews is it just wasn't their book. It
right.
wasn't their type of book, and that's okay.
Absolutely.
You know, and,
well, you've got really great professional reviews, too. So,
I have.
You know, and your audiobooks are just out of the out of this world. Everybody is commenting on your audiobooks. So, we're going to talk about that because I don't often get a chance to speak to authors or make, unfortunately, it's my own fault, I don't ask, about audiobooks. So maybe we can kick it off by talking about that first. Would that be okay with you?
Okay. That would be great.
So how important to you and to your readers and listeners are audiobooks?
Oh, I think it's very important. For me, the problem is what the readers want is the readers want the story, and they want it delivered in the way that they can best consume it. I'm a big audio book reader, book listener, I guess, because I go back and forth at commute every day. And it just takes you away from your everyday life. I mean, I talk to people who listen to audiobooks when they are cleaning or they're just hanging around the house. And it's something that I think authors have a responsibility to deliver in as many formats as possible. You know, we want people who people like print, people like digital, people like audio, you know, and hopefully someday video, but that's someday.
Yeah, large print. There's a bunch of different ways that books get delivered. So that's interesting.
Really
very
is.
Interesting to me. How do you select a narrator for your books?
I don't. That's the one thing. I am way far removed from that whole process. And I'll be really honest with you and your listeners tonight. I've listened to bits and pieces of my audiobooks, but I haven't listened to a whole book. I'm a little superstitious.
Really?
That
That's interesting.
It would make take my mind and the story in a different way than I want it to go. One of these days I'll listen to all of them, but
I think
right
that's
now,
interesting. It is true that when you hear something or when you read out loud to yourself or to somebody else, your different parts of your brain are engaged. I recognize that. I love to read out loud, especially beautiful narrative and prose. I just love to read
mm-hmm.
it. Dialogue. I love to read dialogue out loud. If something has struck me, you know, I'm not going to read what a serial killer is saying, but I do like to read it out loud. So what difference to you does it make if a reader is hearing something differently than you intended, as long as they like it?
There really isn't any difference as far as the reader's perception, you know.
Uh-huh.
The thing I like about the tourist traps, and especially when I go back and start a new book with that, is it's
mm-hmm.
like coming home. So it's like visiting old friends. And those are all my imaginary friends that live in my head, you know, because to me, South Cove is a real place. So when a reader reads that and they get a different impression, maybe they see Esmeralda, the fortune teller, as a different person than I see her. But that's okay because that's her vision. That's the reader's vision of that person.
Sure. Are you concerned that your narrator isn't going to get your vision for your character?
Not so much. No, I'm not concerned of that. What I'm concerned is the narrator will have a different vision of what my vision is, and it'll mess with my kind of like those waivers, those time warp waivers that you see in the movies.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yes, yes. I understand. That's an interesting thing.
It'll be
thing.
A different...
I had never thought about that, but since you point that out, it makes a lot of sense to me. You know, I had not considered that. I mean, obviously, a narrator's not going to climb inside your head, and you have to trust that narrator to do all the POVs and characters in your book and to be nuanced in the reading. So, and I suppose it is true that the perception of the narrator is different than the perception of the author, and your intention is completely different as well. Interesting.
Right.
It's food for thought. I've been reluctant to listen to audiobooks because when it's quiet, when I have quiet, I'm task-oriented, I don't multitask. I have to stay on one thing in order to complete it successfully and the way I want it to be. Otherwise, I'll be distracted if I'm trying to do too many things. So when I have quiet time, if I am plugging in a book to listen to it, I'm afraid that my mind will wander and I'll be thinking about all the things I should be doing, or it becomes ambient noise to me where I don't hear the story anymore. And that would almost make me crazy. I don't know if you've ever been in a place where you're reading and you have so much on your mind that you've read three pages and have no idea what the hell they said. You know?
Oh, yeah.
This
yeah.
happens to me occasionally. So I'm fearful that if someone has just one of those wonderful narrative voices. The tone, the timbre, the nuance of it all, the inflection. If it's hypnotic to me, you're going to lose me in an audiobook. Isn't that terrible?
Yeah.
Maybe if I'm captive in my car and all, because usually I'll have like NPR when I'm in my car and I'm traveling back and forth from the west coast to the east coast of Florida and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
I will usually have that. But even then, sometimes I miss whatever I'm listening to.
And you want to reverse, you know.
Yeah, you can't go backwards on those things, you know. I mean, I could go listen to a podcast, but, you know, once it's over, it's over. So, interesting. Lynn, I love the fact that you have written so many books and have garnered so much praise for your books. But will you tell me about Lynn as a child and how books came into your life, please?
Oh, yeah. I think the first book that I remember totally reading, and it just has stuck with me, is A Wrinkle in Time. And I was the little girl who'd lost her father, you know. So when I read that, it was, oh, he's just off on, you know, another planet. It's okay. But
that's for a kid. That's okay, isn't it?
Uh-huh.
Isn't that all
and,
right?
And it just kind of started me. And I was always the imagination kid. You know, we had a small house, and it had a closet. And in the closet had a wood floor, and it had a trap door to the crawl space. Oh, my gosh. I thought that was a entrance to the castle. You know, I would play with that all the time and couldn't understand that
Narnia,
it was a trap door.
Huh? You were Narnia for sure. You were a Narnia lover then.
Yes.
You were living
your
life.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
wow. And I am so enjoying The Magicians. It's a sci-fi show that's based
on
a ripoff of Narnia.
Huh.
But
I don't have
a
TV,
love,
so I can't relate.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's based off of a book by Levi something. It's called The Magicians is the book.
I know what
and
it is.
And the book
it,
is actually,
I know.
Yeah.
I've read it. It's so I'm familiar with it. Yes. Read the stories. I just can't watch them because I don't have a TV. Is this where, you know, so you had this great imagination and you read this great book as a kid. Is that why you did a little bit of paranormal, like the Salem Gathering, the Council series? Is that where that love of that subgenre came from?
Yeah, it really is. I mean, I the Phantom Toll Booth as a kid. Loved that play, loved that story. Of course, I was a Tolkien geek because I was a band kid. And that's what you do when you're a band kid, you read Tolkien. But it the fact that magic could be real in the world, it just gave me hope. You know, and my paranormal story that is a witch out of water. It's a current, you know, it's current contemporary, but then she is figuring out what her powers are. And I love that idea that you could wake up one morning, Angie Fox does the same type in her Demon Slayer, you know, at 30, she turns into this Demon Slayer. And before she was a kindergarten teacher. So I guess I think there's hope for magic in anyone's life.
I love that. I'm fascinated by magic too. So, you know, I'm with you all the way with that. There's no doubt. Will you write more paranormal, do you think? Or have you set that aside for the time being?
I'm a little swamped. I liked writing romance, but my mysteries just kind of took off. And I'm getting clamored for more of that genre, and apparently I kill people better than I make them fall in love. So,
about that. Well, let me just interject here for listeners. Right now, you can go to Amazon and get A Story to Kill, which is the Kat Latimer mystery, for $1.99 for Kindle. And you can get Dress to Kill, which is a tourist trap mystery. That's book number four, which you do not have to read in order, by the way, for $1.99. You can try both of these different stories. They're both mysteries. You're going to love them for $1.99 a piece. That's $4 well spent on books that are from an award-winning author. And as a matter of fact, the first person who calls in tonight to speak to Lynn will get their choice of either book from Authors on the Air. So let me give you the number. It's 347-633-9609. That's 347-633-9609. Lynn Cahoon, C-A-H-W, listen to me, good grief, Lynn Cahoon, C-A-H-O-N, on Amazon. Go there right now and get those books, because what a great way and a great price to start off with a new author in your life. So you are an exceptionally prolific writer. How many books a year do you write? Because I'm seeing like 4 and 5 books a year.
I'm pretty close to 5 books a year.
Good grief, Lynn.
Especially one of them is usually a contemporary romance novella, and that's what I'm working on right now, the Castleview series. I just don't want to give up the other series, you know.
Nothing wrong with that. I think it's magnificent. It's interesting to me that while you stay in mystery, you do, I mean, you even your romance has a little bit of something in there, but and your paranormal has a little something in there. And, of course, now you've got The Tourist Trap and Kat Latimer. I could go back and read all the different things that you have, the different series that you have. My goodness, you're going to have to go the Bull Rider collection. Let me think. What else is there? I have to go on your page to look at everything, because you have so many different subgenres. You take a chance on all this stuff. There are not a lot of people who will take a chance and go into different genres. So books interest you completely.
I didn't know the word branding when I first started. I wrote The Bull Rider's Brother, which was my first book that released. Sold it the same month I sold The Bull Rider's Brother, I sold A Member of the Council, which was my witchcraft book. And so I had, you know, bull riders and witches. And then did a few standalone romances. And then Kensington picked up my cozy series, the Guidebook to Murder. And I just kind of stayed there for a while. But it for me, they're all about community and they're all about family. So when you're looking at any of my books, you've got a pretty big cast of characters, and you've got a pretty big cast of characters that return time after time. So you get to know these people, and that's what I love
about
writing them.
I bet you do. So let's talk about that, because you have so many people on your canvas in all of your stories. Nancy Martin was on before you, and she was on at 7, you're on at 9. And so I asked her, she has like 48 books out or something, and she's like in number 13 on one of her series. Do you have to keep like a writer's Bible or something for each of your series? Because you do have a very broad landscape with a lot of different characters. And it seems to me that they're all important to your story. You have your main characters, but even those characters who float in and out of the story are very, very important. Who are not your main characters, they add richness to the story that you're weaving. And they interact with the main characters and maybe with the you know, not only the protagonist, but with the antagonist. So how do you keep all of that straight?
Oh, I do a lot of rereading. I have kind of a story bible for the guidebook books. I drew my own map of what the town looks like.
Did you really?
The biggest, yeah, I did. It's really cool. Because then when I walk out of Jill's store, I know that if I go left, I'm going towards the winery and I'm going towards the bed and breakfast. If I go right, I'm going towards the ocean and, you know. And so you have to think about those things because you have to think about where the sun's setting and would she be able to see it from her back porch and those type of things.
What a cool thing.
And then,
thing.
Of course, when,
you, know, I never
when
even
you
thought
build
about
new
that.
Things, when you build new
sure.
things, new businesses comes in, you know, you have to fit them into the place. But the hardest thing for me is I will know that I've said Greg has blue eyes. To me,
okay.
Greg has blue eyes. But
okay.
I'll go back in through all of my books and I've never described them. And it's like, you know, because he was a not Greg specifically, because Greg's a pretty major character, but, you know, I'll have this description of this guy in my head, and I want to make sure I'm not changing it from book to book, and so I'll go back to make sure what I said, and it's like, you never said. So, you know,
are you glad that you haven't said? Are you glad, though, that you haven't described him? Is it up to the reader to have a physical description of the character, other than he has blue eyes?
A little bit. But I'm always surprised that the image that is so clear in my mind wasn't something I put down on paper.
Do you have an image of an actual person or an actor, or have you have kind of a composite of things, but can you see his face clearly?
I can see his face clearly, or her face, or the character. I can see them clearly.
Character, right.
It's really hard for me to put them with actresses and actors because they're close, you know, they're not right there. My Cat Latimer series, the best friend, Shauna, she looks, the description I have of her is an Irish Selma Gomez. And that makes absolutely no sense at all.
A Selena Gomez?
Selena Gomez,
Irish,
yeah. If
Irish,
if she was
Gomez.
Irish with the pretty
red
hair. But, you know, I don't know. I don't watch enough television and enough movies to actually build them that way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now,
Interesting.
Yeah, I'm working on a Castleview story right now, and I took out pictures. And one of them actually is of Tori Burch, who's a designer, because I wanted the female to be classic and, you know, love clothes and all of that. And then I have this really very attractive bad boy with the gruffy.
Of course, they're all attractive. They're charming and attractive. That's the problem. You know, I told you
yes,
that before the
yes,
show started. You know, bum magnet here.
Well, if you looked at my Twitter page, it's like addicted to bad boys. That's my motto.
Absolutely. Oh, I get
but
that completely.
I love taking that picture and then making it into my person, you know, my Eric. So that's how I do it.
When you start a new book or even a new series, what comes first, the character or the story? The character or the what
the
if, I guess I should say?
The character. You know, it,
really?
It's all, it, yeah, it's either the character or the setting. You know, when I, guidebook started because of an old house that was for sale in a little tourist town on the Canadian or California coast when I went down for spring break to visit my sister one time. I took a picture of this old house and I kept that old house and I kept that old house and it was just who would live there and why is it all run down and what happened to the prior owner and it became guidebook. You know, it went from that picture to that whole series, which is crazy.
Now, do you often photograph things and keep them for future reference?
Yes. Yep.
Interesting.
Yep.
I love that.
Yeah.
Do you, let me ask you a couple of rapid questions here. Does music come into play when you're writing?
Only if I have to drown out other sounds.
Okay.
If I get
what
too
about,
much music, I'll start singing.
Right, and then you're gone. You're out of the zone.
And then
by
I'm
then.
Gone.
What
yeah.
about scent? Do candles or food cooking, does that ever stimulate a storyline or a character or a location or anything like that?
No, that usually just makes me hungry.
So it's, you're so funny. So it's a visual thing for you. You're very visual in your writing process, then I take it.
Yes. Yes.
Tell me how you write. Do you sit down? Are you a disciplined writer? Do you sit down at the same time every day and pound out your words, and then hopefully you've met either a word quota or come to an end of a chapter and said, okay, I've done my work today. I'm going to leave my writing space now and go about my business. Are you like that?
When I'm good, no. No, I work
funny.
Another job still. So I have very little time to focus on my writing. So if I get a
Sorry, go ahead.
So I
you pound out 5 books in a year.
Uh-huh.
I mean, authors who just do nothing but write oftentimes can barely manage to get out one book a year, Lynn. You have to understand how unusual it is for you. For me to talk to someone who's cranking out 5 books a year, mm-hmm. and wants to do more, all the while working a full-time other job, is pretty impressive.
And my mind keeps churning the story as I'm doing other things. And, you know, and I can't write at night. You know, once 8:39 hits, I can write, but the sentences that I'm putting down don't match the story.
Right.
You know, they're just garbled.
You're just
they're
too
words.
Tired at that point.
Yeah, I'm
right.
Just too tired. So first thing in the morning.
Oh, really?
It's a great time.
Wow. A lot of writers tell me that. They like the newness of the day, and it's the new
mm-hmm.
words on a new page. So do you outline?
Barely. I bullet point.
You kind of just. Really?
So I know where it starts because I'll know what the opening scene is and kind of what I want to happen in the book. And I know where it ends. And then I fit in things between it. But mostly it's butt and chair and fingers on keyboard and I write and the story comes.
Are you from a family of storytellers by chance? Did your family tell stories or generational stories?
No.
Not did they lie.
No.
I'm saying, were they storytellers? Because some families, you know, it's a past stories of the generation, like their parents and so on and so forth, you know, at family gatherings, or there's always someone who's got a story. I just wonder where this storyteller in you comes from.
I'm very nearsighted. I won't even say fairly nearsighted. When I was six and got my first pair of glasses, I looked at the floor and went, there's spots on here. You know, I wasn't seeing a lot of stuff. So for me, it was a bad time for my mom, and she had lots of kids, and I told you my father passed. And I think that's how I entertained myself with stories. And I know as I grew that I continued to entertain myself with stories, and, you know, so I was a storyteller.
So it's a natural thing for you to be writing then, it seems. I'm fascinated by that. That's amazing. That's wonderful. Good for you. I wish I could sit with you for like hours and hear your stories, because it's fascinating to me. I mean, I can tell a tale, but, you know, I'm not a storyteller. So, and there's a huge difference. Although, boy, I sure do appreciate a good storyteller. When you start writing, are you enjoying it, the process of writing? Or is it...
When I start, yes. When I'm in the middle, I think it's the stupidest thing I've ever done.
Why did I ever start this book? When you put the end, when you type the end and it's your final revision and it's done and ready to go to your proofer and your editor and everything else, how are you feeling at that point? Are you tired? Are you ecstatic? Are you thinking, I'm never doing this again? I mean, what is it that you feel when you finally put a period on it?
Now, see, I'm ready to go to the next book, probably about 20,000 words before I'm done.
So you're a masochist,
like,
then. You're hating it in the center, but you're like, let me do it again anyway. Let me beat myself up a little bit more.
Well, that's because the next book is going to be so much easier.
Okay, so let's pull on that thread a little bit. How many books have you published now? Have you got out there published?
I think I counted 21 the last time I counted.
In a very short amount of time, too. You're in a very short period. You've been writing for 5 years or something? You've been writing?
I've been published.
Or been published for 5 years?
Four.
Yeah, it's a very short period of time.
Yeah, it'll be five, yeah.
So you've cranked out a lot of books. So from the first book that you put out to the ones that one of the four or five that will be out this year, what have you discovered about yourself as a writer? Hello?
I'm
Lynn?
Here. I think, I'm here.
I thought I scared you away. She goes, screw this
almost,
noise, Pam.
Almost.
I'm hanging up.
go running away.
Okay.
So
let me give you a different question then. What would you change or what has changed from book one to book 22 or whatever it is?
I trust the story more. I worry less about this has to be here and this has to be there and it's not working.
You mean the
and
structure?
Why is it not working?
The structure, you mean?
Yeah.
The structure of the story, the actual
craft of it.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Because I'm a huge reader. I mean, huge reader. And that's kind of, I've learned writing by osmosis. You know, I can't tell you what I learned in English. I know, and I mispronounce words because the only time I've seen them are in books. You know, I've never heard anyone pronounce it. But the story is what's important. And if there's
Absolutely.
A way to get that story across better or more detailed or the motion to work with it, you know, that's what I want to worry about. That's what I want to make sure is perfect. That's what I, you know, that's what I work on with my craft.
Interesting. I would like to, I'm going to say this and I could be wrong, but I believe that your stories are, or your books are story-centric versus character-centric. Because you have a large ensemble cast, it would be difficult to say that every story is character-driven. And because another thing you said is interesting to me, that you photographed that old house and the story form there. Even if you start off with a character, you really have a story-driven novel, wouldn't you say?
I think so, yeah. I don't think I'm totally plot-driven. But...
Well, it may not be plot, you know, and that's a different, that's a totally different thing. But I think you like the idea of telling the story, which is probably why you haven't described your character other than the one, that one male character with, you've just said, blue eyes.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, but you know your character. He's fully fleshed out in your mind, isn't he?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely.
And do you reveal a little bit more about each character as each new book in the series comes out? Are we going to learn more about each of the characters?
Oh, yeah. You know, with my cat Latimer, you know, I brought in the ex-boyfriend, and he's carrying a secret that, you know, he's still carrying in book three. And he lays down little hints for it, but she doesn't know the information. You know, I do, but I think
fascinating.
The characters have to grow, and they have to deal with their past and deal with their future and be different from book one to book two to book three. Or
sure,
you don't have real people.
Right. Rather than using your location as a character, your characters are your characters, essentially. This story is what it is. I like that. It's interesting, and it explains so much why you're so beloved by your readers, and it makes sense to me. We're almost out of time. I promised I wouldn't keep you all night, although I wish I had more time to talk to you, but... just let me ask you some really quick questions, and maybe you'll give me a quick answer. Whose book is on your nightstand right now?
Illusions by Richard Bach.
Okay. So do you read in your genre, or any of your genres, I should say?
I try not to read in the genre I'm writing at the time, which mostly is cozy mystery right now. So
you don't want to steal
ideas
or have it invade your brain.
So I'm reading a lot of magic. I'm reading a lot of Heather Graham. I'm reading a lot.
Oh, Heather's
wonderful. Crew of Hunters.
Yeah. Oh yeah, very good.
Go ahead.
Boy, no. You mentioned Heather Graham, who, do you know, I knew Heather before. She was really hit the pinnacle of her career. Isn't that funny? She talk about writing in different genres. You know, she really has done it all, too, and she's very, very prolific as well. You have fur babies. Do you have cats or dogs or both or something
else? I'm bilingual. I'm both.
You speak Bow Wow and Meow Meow.
Yep. They're all three
good
in
for
here,
you.
Actually, with me.
Good. Well, they're behaving. That's nice. When you do go to events and when you do workshops, what's the most common question aspiring writers ask you?
Where do you get your story? And it's like, that's like saying, you know, cut a vein open.
Yeah, right.
Or
well, they say,
what do
right,
you do
should...
with book? Yeah,
I'm
or
sorry,
what do
ahead.
You do with
what
writer's
are you
block?
Doing? But you
and
know
it's
something?
Like, there is no such thing.
That's what I want to say to you. This is what everyone tells me, that if you have a writer's block, you've done something wrong in your story. You have to go back and figure out where you took the wrong turn, right? You're at a dead end. You've
mm-hmm.
taken the wrong street. So
mm-hmm.
I'm so glad you affirm that to me. Really, that's great. What's the best piece of writing advice you ever got?
There's always a lake monster.
Here you go.
And basically it means there's always got to be conflict in your story.
Absolutely. Otherwise, what's the point?
I was writing too nice. Mm-hmm.
I read a contemporary romance story where there was it was set in a diner or something or a cafe, and there was a small like burner fire, and it was during the winter and everybody had to run out without their coat, and that was the height of the conflict. And I thought, nope, not gonna do it. Like, where's the beef? I wanted to say, it was crazy, but that's what happens sometimes. Even the best of them fall into a trap, and, you know, the characters can only do so much in a story. You still need to have some heart-pounding moments no matter what.
Oh,
Lynn,
yeah.
where can readers and listeners find you on the webs, please?
Very easy, www.lynncahoon.com. Or
and
I
know you answer
Facebook. Oh, yeah.
Yep. I know.
Yeah.
I know you answer your own mail and your own post and everything else. And I encourage everyone to go take a look at Lynn's website. It is just a delightful, wonderful, bright page that's so easy to get around from point to point. You don't have to wade through all this nonsense and all. It's just really a nice, lovely website. Go and visit. And by all means, you have two books available for $1.99 a piece. You can't beat that. Four more books, at least, maybe five, probably, coming out in 2017. The first one releases in February. It's called Fatality by Firelight. And that is a Cat Latimer mystery book. And then after that, Hospitality and Homicide, which is a tourist trap mystery, that'll be in May, and then in June, another tourist trap mystery, Killer Party. So all of them look like tons of fun, and I hope that you go and follow Lynn. She's a terrific writer. Lynn, I cannot thank you enough for being with me tonight on Authors on the Air. Will you come back again and tell me what's new and exciting in your life, maybe later on in the year?
Well, definitely. That would be fun.
And thank you so much. Have fun writing, and we'll chat on Facebook as per usual, okay?
All righty. Sounds great. Thanks
thank
so much.
You. Thanks so much. Have a great evening. Good night. Lynn Cahoon, folks. Thank you for being with me tonight. Stay tuned on Wednesday night. Boy, there's all kinds of interesting things, shows happening on Wednesday. Next Steps with Jenny Milchman and the ITW's on. She has Elizabeth Heider and KJ Howe on. Skid Row Chatter with host Tom Pitts is talking to Bob Mayer, who wrote Trouble Boys, the true story of the Replacements. You won't want to miss that one. That's going to be excellent. I don't even know who I have coming on. It's going to be a really great night. I think Carolyn Hayes, but you know, I'll let you know. Don't worry about it. There's probably a cat sleeping on my appointment, my calendar. Thanks for being with me. Have a great night, and thank you, Mom and Dad. Good night, all. Thank you.